All right, counsel, have you both signed in?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and Mr. Herdman? It's a different order. Sir, how much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
5 minutes, Your Honor.
All right, whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court, Michael Herdman on behalf of the injured worker appellant, Ms. Rivera. In this case, the commission was presented with a set of facts which could only lead to one conclusion, and that was that Ms. Rivera suffered an injury to her back in April 26, 2012, that lower back injury resulted in symptoms into her left leg, which persisted throughout the injury, the date of the injury, until the next surgery, and continued until they were found to be permanent. The third factual finding, which can only be found in this case, is that she suffered a 60% impairment to her left leg by way of this back injury, and that was a finding that was rendered
counsel,
by...
Counsel, in terms of the... And yes, I need to apologize for interrupting you so quickly, but in terms of the permanency of injury to the left leg, the records in terms of the factual information don't give any sort of clue in reference to permanence, do they? They are just in relation to the back injury and the back surgery.
The rating from Dr. Kevin McGovern that was provided and also had an addendum states that she suffered permanent impairment of 60% to her left leg by way of the April 26, 2012 injury.
When did that information, when was that information provided?
So that information was provided more than 3 years after the date of injury. It was provided in 2016 and 2017, so after the three-year period after the injury.
And am I correct that at no time did she ever receive any award for disability? It was a medical-only award.
That is correct, Your Honor. And because of that, her case is then governed by Section 65.2/708B of the Virginia Code, which states that in cases where no compensation has been made...
Well, if no claim for any type of permanent disability was made within the statute of limitations, tell me why the commission erred.
All right, I see. So the claim for permanent partial disability was originally made in 2013 and was reserved pending a finding of maximum medical improvement. It was held in abeyance and was pending a finding of maximum medical improvement, which, of course, was not found until more than 3 years after the injury had occurred. So because of that, this case, this court actually has already looked at and interpreted 708B and the way that it reacts to permanent impairment findings that are made more than 3 years after the injury in the case of Target Corporation versus Velasquez. In Target Corporation versus Velasquez, the facts are quite similar. Of course, the names are different and the dates are different, but I find it to be very influential on this court's finding because in Velasquez, the injured worker suffered an injury in 2004. She claimed permanent partial disability without an actual finding of maximum medical improvement or a permanency finding. In 2005, she reserved it, and then she was able to reach maximum medical improvement 4 years after the injury happened in 2008.
Is there any medical evidence before the commission within the statute of limitations period that the impairment to her leg was in any way related to her back injury?
Yes, Your Honor.
What is that?
So Dr. Patterter, in every time that he evaluates her, he notes that there is permanent that her back is having radiating pain into her leg. However, a actual finding that was rendered within the three-year period, I don't believe that exists. Dr. Patterter, in August of 2015, looks back and says that her injury to her leg was due to her back injury, and then that is later fortified by Dr. McGovern's report, which, of course, comes later. But to say that the evidence needs to exist within the three-year period and can't come in later referring back, I believe does not reflect this court's prior findings. In the case of Johnson versus Smith, this court said, and this was then later echoed in the Target Corporation versus Velasquez finding, that evidence of permanent impairment does not need to exist within the three-year period.
Weren't those cases where there was a claim filed within the statutory period and then evidence establishing at a later time the degree of that impairment?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that is the case here as well in the Rivera case.
Well, where is the claim that was filed within the three-year period? Where was any indication to the commission that there were, or the employer for that matter, that there was going to be a permanent disability claim?
So the claim for permanency was reserved in 2013. To give you an exact location, it's not in the appendix. However, it is referenced in the judicial opinion by the deputy commissioner, which states, in the present proceeding on page 272 of the appendix, pending before the commission are the claimant's request for hearing filed on November 22nd, 2013.
You're going to have to speak a little slower. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Your Honor. On page 272 of the appendix in the judicial opinion by a deputy commissioner, quoting, the claim for permanent partial disability benefits was first reserved on November 22nd, 2013. Just over a year after the injury, and then it was perfected with a maximum medical improvement and permanent partial disability rating and filed again on March 8th, 2017. So, referring back to Velasquez, after she'd received the permanent partial disability rating, more than 4 years after the injury, she then claimed that she was suffering from permanent partial disability. The court and the commission as well both found that just by providing the evidence that the specialist had come to that she had suffered an injury and that the permanent impairment related back to the original injury, she had proven and therefore satisfied the requirements of 708B that permanent impairment resulted from the injury and that it existed within the 36-month period. And that, I believe, is the most important requirement here, which is that there must be evidence that the permanent impairment, that the condition resulting in the permanent impairment existed within the 36-month period. It can then later be proven once maximum medical improvement has been found. And, of course, in Ms. Velasquez's case, that was an impossibility to prove that there's permanent impairment until, of course, that point can be made when there's no more treatment available, and then she's able to reach a finding of maximum medical improvement. That is the same situation that occurred to Ms. Rivera. She was injured in 2012. She claimed permanent partial disability benefits pending a finding of maximum medical improvement the next year. That claim wasn't prospected again until 4 years after the injury, and only then when Dr. Patter found that she was at maximum medical improvement in 2006.
I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. Maybe no my problem. Hearing is not what it once was, but tell me again where I can find that claim for permanent partial.
The original claim for permanent partial disability benefits, it's not in the appendix, Your Honor.
And so, all right, thank you.
But with the evidence that's been presented to the commission, there was permanent partial disability that existed because of this injury. Dr. McGovern's opinion alone is enough to support the finding that Ms. Rivera...
On the claim for permanent partial disability, is that part of the contention on appeal, that one was not filed properly?
No, Your Honor.
It was a finding by the deputy commissioner, although the evidence is not in the record. It's not even questioned that that was filed, as I understand the status of the case presently.
Correct, Your Honor. The reason why the deputy commissioner did not allow the denied the claim for permanent partial disability benefits was because he thought, in using the thought process in a commission case, Williams versus Panos, he decided that there was no evidence within the 36-month period after the injury, which was suggesting, was evoking, was otherwise hinting at there being any permanent impairment. And I believe that's the wrong way to look at this, because to say that something is permanent before it's actually been determined to be permanent, it can only be determined to be permanent when all of the avenues of medical treatment have been exhausted.
But doesn't there have to be a claim for that particular body part? I mean, the leg is not the back. While there, I'm sure, are circumstances where a back injury can cause impairment to the leg, it's not absolute. So you have to say, I have a permanent disability to my leg.
Yes, Your Honor, and that was claimed in 2013, alleging medical award for a back injury and reserving permanent partial disability. It wasn't asserted.
But did that claim mention the leg at all?
No, Your Honor, it did not.
Did any claim mention the leg?
Not until the filing in March of 2017, Your Honor. But even then, the commission has long understood that radicular symptoms from a back injury can, of course, affect, depending on where it's in the neck or the back, can affect the extremities. And, of course, 503 only allows for permanent partial disability benefits for the extremities, not for the back or the neck itself. So based off of the evidence that was put in front of the commission, there is no evidence that stating that the left extremity was affected by a prior injury or that it didn't have impairment. There was no evidence in front of the commission stating that there's some other cause for this left leg impairment.
But isn't the absence of the claim that the 2013 claim involved the left leg, isn't the absence of that particular notification fatal to your case?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Is there any law that we should be aware of that would suggest that even though it might not have specified the limb that was involved?
There's none that I can cite at this time, but by putting the commission on notice that there was permanent impairment and they were claiming a back injury, I believe that, you know, the inference, of course, is that it's not the back injury itself that's being claimed for permanent impairment. It is any radicular symptoms that have or may arise from the back injury.
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time. You certainly may continue if you wish, or reserve your time.
I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Sierra Malone, and I represent Kohl's Department Store and its insurer, the New Hampshire Insurance Company. The appellant asks this Court to determine that back surgeries and complaints of pain alone are sufficient to show a permanent left leg disability. This Court should affirm the full Commission's finding for two reasons. First, this Court's case law has established that the permanent impairment must manifest itself within 36 months following the date of the accident. And second, credible evidence supports the full commission's determination that the appellant failed to meet this burden. So first, it's not enough that there are symptoms in a leg that are ongoing. It's not enough that there is pain in a leg, whether there is surgery to other parts of the body. The appellant must show that her left leg became permanently disabled 36 months after the date of her injury.
Do you agree that the appellant could have just filed a claim for the left leg impairment and then provided the medical evidence after that 36-month period had run?
Yes, Your Honor. As long as that evidence showed that during the 36-month period, her left leg became permanently disabled.
Does it have to be an allegation of permanent disability or simply an allegation that her left leg, she's now suffering a disability in her left leg due to the back injury?
It needs to be a permanent disability because...
Well, then if that's the case, how do you ever do that if you can't establish that it's permanent, that it's reached maximum medical improvement until after 36 months is run?
Because as this court has said in Southwest Virginia Tire, a 2000 case, a doctor can look at all the medical evidence and determine the date that the permanency began. Their IME expert could have said that her left leg became permanently disabled within 36 months, but the IME expert did not say that. Dr. McGovern didn't determine at all when the permanency began. It could have began that day that he saw her and made the recommendation of the 60%.
So, I mean, I'm trying to understand. If the claimant files a claim supporting medical evidence that says that she is now suffering from impairment to her left leg as a result of the back injury, and the doctor says, I cannot at this time tell you whether it's going to be permanent. We are hoping for a full recovery, but I can't guarantee it. And then after the 36-month period, the doctor said, didn't work out, it's not going to get any better, this is maximum medical improvement. You're saying that that is not an allowable claim?
If the doctor believes that the permanency didn't begin until after the 36 months, then no, that's not an allowable claim. Section 65.2-708B says the commission may make an award within 36 months. 3 years is the time period established by the statute. It's the plain language of the statute.
But you have previously acknowledged that the award effectively, that the award can be entered after the 36 months because you said that the medical evidence can be presented after that period has run. So it's not that the award doesn't have to be made within 36 months. It's the question of whether the impairment exists within 36 months.
Correct, Your Honor, which means that the doctor needs to say that the permanency began within 36 months, which this court has...
I've looked, and I'll be honest with you, I can't find it. We've used a lot of verbiage and language in our opinions, but I can't find anywhere that says that the disability, there must be evidence that the disability is in fact permanent within the 36 months. I find language that says you have to establish at least the potential for a permanent disability within that period of time.
If I may direct your court's attention to an opinion you actually wrote.
Oh, that hurts.
The Target Corporation versus Valquez, the 2013 unpublished opinion, I quote, the claimant simply has to prove that he has a permanent disability that existed within the limitation period.
Yeah, and I think that was incorporating the language and verbiage that I've mentioned earlier. It really doesn't stand for the proposition that the permanency must occur within that period.
Your Honor, I would argue that it does stand for the proposition that the permanency must occur within that area. And if I may direct this court's attention to other cases that don't directly address 708B, but do address similar statutes, the Johnson versus Smith case, which is about 708A, states that the reason permanency was allowed was because Johnson's permanent disability was present and existing when the application was filed, which was within the 36-month period.
But present doesn't necessarily mean that it's been definitively declared. There just has to be some sort of objective medical proof or evidence of it.
Right.
So why wouldn't the complaints of the continued leg pain and the fact that continued be evidence of that?
Because pain alone is not compensable under Statute 65.2-503.
There's also radiation as well as other factors that are found. And I understand that that could be considered to be pain, the radiation.
Right. So what the appellant is arguing is that she had pain radiating to her left leg during the 36 months following the work injury. And even if that's true, that pain is only compensable under 503 and subsequently 708B if it impairs her functionality, which means it's her burden to show that pain impaired her functionality. She has not presented any evidence that within those 36 months, her pain became so bad it permanently impaired her left leg's functionality, which is why the full commission determined that medical evidence wasn't sufficient to show that her left leg became permanently disabled. Neither was her hearing testimony. She didn't once testify at the hearing about how her left leg functioned within the 36 months following her injury. She didn't even give an opinion about when she believed her left leg became permanently disabled. She only talked about how her left leg was then in 2017, which isn't relevant to determining whether she timely filed her application. Now, this court's other case law, for example, in Armstrong Furniture versus Elder, a 1987 case, which deals with the now statute 708A, although it was categorized differently then, says that the change in condition must occur within 24 months. Applying that to a permanency disability means that the permanency must occur within the time period stated in the statute. It's not enough that she was temporarily disabled, because 503 doesn't give you benefits for temporary disability. 708B doesn't give you benefits for temporary disability. It doesn't give you benefits for pain alone. The appellant must show, which she did not show, that her left leg became permanently disabled within 36 months following her work injury.
And this is even though a claim for this impairment, if you will, this problem has been filed timely, let's say.
Yes, Your
Honor.
This
case, 2013. That's or in any case, in all those cases you mentioned, had there been a claim filed after which the proof of permanency occurred?
In all the cases I've mentioned, the initial claim was timely filed. And in this case, we're not arguing that she didn't make a claim within 36 months. The problem is...
And that doesn't hold, it's not a placeholder in a sense?
No, Your Honor.
It's not a placeholder under workers' comp.
No, Your Honor. Section 708 is not a statute of limitations in the ordinary sense. And in fact, the Armstrong case that I just mentioned, a 1987 case, specifically states, and I will quote, that this statute is not a statute of limitations in the ordinary sense. It does not provide that a claimant has 24 months from the date of change in condition to file, but instead that the change in condition must occur within that time period. And this court has said in other cases, speculative claims are not allowed. The full commission has said time and time again, a claimant cannot file a permanent partial disability claim and then hold it until they actually become permanently disabled. It must fit within the confines of 708, which states for 36 months, not 5 years, not 10 years. The permanency must be established as beginning.
So would you say that the evidence that we're talking about that can be presented subsequent to the claim has a dual function, that it shows, first of all, that the claim itself was not speculative in 2013?
Yes.
And it then goes forward to establish the other element, i.e. it is permanent, and it affects this particular limb.
Yes, Your Honor.
So there are many functions on the evidentiary portion of the requirement, arguably.
Yes.
But it also includes establishing that the initial claim was not speculative. Under Armstrong, I guess, that would be important.
It would be very important, Your Honor. As this court has said in Southwest Virginia Tire, a 2000 case, the application must allege a change in condition within the time of filing, which means that you must allege at the time of filing and show that you did have a permanency. Now, that permanent disability can get worse. Nobody's arguing that she needs to reach maximum medical improvement within 3 years of her work injury. Nobody's alleging that the permanency rating can't go up. As this court has said before, it's allowed to get worse, but it must have some minimum level of permanency. And she simply didn't present evidence that the pain in her leg created a permanent functional disability within 36 months following her work injury. And therefore, under this statute, under 708B, which we all agree is the relevant statute, she is not entitled to permanent partial disability benefits for her left leg.
But, I can't ever remember what I've written in the past, but I did pull up Ballot's Quiz to take a look at it. And I do think that what we were saying there, and I don't mean this to be personal to me, but there was credible evidence before the commission establishing, quote, the existence of a disability, which was a consequence of an injury by accident, and which was present and existing when the application was filed. So it was the disability that was established. It happened to be an allegation of permanent disability, but it was the disability that we were concerned about. And that's what concerns me, and it's, I don't know whether it's even relevant to this case, because I don't think anybody's arguing, there's no specific allegation as to the leg disability at all, and maybe we can decide it on a narrow basis, but it does concern me that what extent we have to require a claimant to effectively prove something that the doctor can't opine upon within that 36 months, that is, that this will in fact become permanent.
Your Honor, the doctor doesn't need to say within 36 months that the leg will become permanently disabled. The doctor, even 5 years later, can look back and put a date on when the permanency began. Her doctor never did that, which is why she didn't have the evidence.
Then I think we're in agreement. All I have to do is say there's a potential for permanency here.
No, Your Honor, they need more than that. It's when they're filing the claim, they need to be able to show that at that time, their leg is permanently disabled. They don't need to show it then.
I thought you said the doctor could 5 years later go back and say, and in my opinion, that permanency was in existence within the 36-month period.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that doesn't mean the claimant can just make a wild guess that one day her leg will become permanently disabled. She needs to have some basis to say that her leg is permanently disabled within 36 months, and then she can get the supporting medical evidence and present her case to the full commission.
But how does the claimant do that? If the doctor says, I can't at this time give you a firm opinion on whether this will ultimately result in permanency.
Well, Your Honor,
does that mean she's just out of luck at that point?
In this case, we're not arguing that she didn't timely file or that she couldn't have filed. We're arguing that she didn't present any evidence, either subsequent or during the 36 months, that shows that her left leg became permanently disabled 3 years after. All she presented to the full commission was evidence of pain and then back surgeries, both before and after the 3 years.
You say became permanent. Does that mean it began with this, it proceeded with that, and it finally established permanency? And those over a course of period, in the initial claim, 2013, could it be enough to simply say my leg had radiating pain down it in 2013, and I'm making a claim for permanent partial disability? Would that be enough?
Once it comes time to actually try the case, that wouldn't be enough, because she would have to show that at the time of her filing...
Would that be enough as an initial piece of evidence that would then be supplemented by what was later found to be the condition by a physician, shall we say, 5 years later?
Yes, Your Honor. If she was able to show that at the time of her filing, by later subsequent medical providers saying that her permanency began either the day she filed or before she filed her claim.
Something about the permanency began. I guess I'm having a hard time understanding how a worker could know what to put down as a claim.
When you say that the permanency occurred within the period, isn't the real question, is the permanency related to the injury?
Certainly, Your Honor. If the permanency isn't related to the injury, then it's not compensable under 708.
But is it sufficient for the doctor to say that the permanency is related to the injury? Is that all he needs to say in order to establish the permanency existed within this 36-month period?
No, Your Honor, because injuries become permanent at different points. And we need medical evidence to say when this injury became permanent. Maybe it came permanent after the fifth surgery. Maybe it was always permanent the very day it happened, or became permanent after physical therapy didn't go right. The point is that we need to know when it became permanent, because 708B only allows for permanent partial disability benefits within 36 months of the work injury. And
go ahead, Jen.
And for these reasons, this court should affirm the full commission's denial of permanent partial disability benefits.
Right. Thank you, Your Honors. Mr. Herden? Go ahead, sir.
This court doesn't choose its wording lightly, and I take that same approach when interpreting the language in Target Corporation versus Velasquez. In Target Corporation versus Velasquez, the court says that the claimant simply has to prove that he has a permanent disability that existed within the limitation period and that was caused by a compensable
accident.
What
do you say to Ms. Malone's point that there's just not, as I understand it, a pinpointing by the medical experts that the injury is permanent at X date?
I disagree with that contention. I believe that Dr. McGovern does pinpoint the beginning of the existence of the permanent impairment when he says that it relates back to the April 26, 2012 injury. That's the day that it begins. Now, of course, the permanency of it doesn't...
Wait, are you saying that the permanency begins or the injury begins? From
that the injury and the condition which ultimately became permanent began on April 26, 2012.
And that's what inferentially be part of your claim in 2013. It's that injury.
Yes, Your Honor. So the...
Although we don't know if it was specified.
So to require that the injury itself becomes permanent within a three-year period, I believe that sets too high of a bar. It's going to prevent vast majorities of claimants who are suffering from severe ongoing conditions from being able to ever recover permanency benefits. I believe this is against the humanitarian structure of the Act, which is to be remedial in nature and not to exclude people based off of the severity of their injuries. Ms. Rivera...
But the flip side of the argument is the employer is entitled to some type of notice within that 36-month period that this leg injury is compensable. And that seems to be what's lacking here.
Well, I would argue, based off of the evidence that's been provided, she had continual persistent symptoms of leg pain as a result of her back injury. This was noted by Dr. Patterner throughout the course of her treatment and within 3 years, and her permanency claim was filed. So another note to mention, Counsel is correct. Pain alone is not compensable. However, this court has also addressed this in the case of Lynchburg Foundry Company Corporation versus Tucker, as well as later in Blakey versus the University of Virginia Health System. Pain can result in disability. Pain alone is not compensable. However, common sense, logic, and medical opinion dictate that at times pain can result in impairment of function and result in disability. So that pain was putting the employer on notice that there could be a permanency claim in addition to the permanency claim.
But was that in reference to a permanency potentially as related to the back injury? Because the complaint came as a result of radiating from because of the back injury, according to the information that was presented at that time. Or could be read that way, I guess you'd say.
Regarding Blakey and...
No, regarding this particular instant, applying Blakey, indicating where you're saying that pain can actually become a permanent injury. In this particular claim, the pain that was radiating from the leg seemed to be related to the back injury. So I'm asking, how does that interplay with Blakey? Or are they distinguishable?
I don't believe they are distinguishable in the sense that the pain is putting the employer on notice that there is some
sort of... But to which injury? To the back or to the leg?
To the leg, Your Honor. And of course, any pain regarding the range of motion of the back or anything else related to the back is irrelevant. It's not compensable. It's any impairment to the leg itself. And, of course, Dr. McGovern, again, premised his finding of permanent impairment based off of the pain as well as other functional deficits when he provided his rating. So... returning again just to the basic premise that the impairment needs to become permanent within the 36-month period, I believe that's too high of a bar. It'll exclude injured workers from ever being able to recover. In this case, Ms. Rivera was referred for surgery within 3 years of her injury, but it was delayed, and the employer contested the causal relationship of the surgery and pushed it back. And she wasn't able to have the surgery and therefore reach maximum medical improvement until more than 3 years after the injury. It puts her in an impossible position, and for all the evidence that's been submitted, I believe the commission only had one way to find in this matter. There's only the only reasonable inference is that she suffered from permanent impairment to her leg because of her back injury, because of the 2012 back injury. And therefore, the commission's decision should be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Herder.